Welcome to Burning River Baseball on Burning River Radio. It's a podcast, but we call it radio. I am Joe Koblitz. I'm joined today by Justin Latta, as always, for the three episodes that we've done so far.
As always, four times.
So if you're expecting, Danny Cunningham and Ben Beldon, sorry, they will talk about basketball at another point.
Possibly.
We're here to talk about the Indians. And of course, in spring training, they always go into spring training, even bad teams go into spring training at the beginning saying, our only goal is to avoid injuries. The Indians have sucked at this so far.
Yeah, that hasn't really been their strong suit.
Let's talk about the least important first, which is essentially Cody Anderson getting Tommy John surgery. He wasn't in the starting rotation. To me, he wasn't even number six. That's Mike Clevenger. He wasn't number seven. That's Ryan Merritt. He was probably number eight.
I would have argued.
Do you see this as a big deal? What's that?
I would have argued he was seven.
Okay, so he was seven. Is this a big deal? He's going to miss a year and a half now, probably.
It is for depth. I mean, I think we know that they're not going to make it through the entire year with seven starters. But, I mean, they do have Ryan Mayer. They do have Sean Morimondo. At some point, they have Ryan Kaminsky or Rob Kaminsky as well. Someone pointed that out to me, too. I guess, you know, if things get that bad, they also have Rob Kaminsky. So, I guess they have other options. But on the grand scheme of things, no. It just would be nice not to have to dip into, you know, numbers 9 and 10.
Yeah, and of course, one of our writers, Gavin Potter, today was complaining about pitching depth, and Mike said something to me along the same lines of you always need more pitching, but we've been talking about Adam Plutko as at least a number two, number three starter for years, and he's going to be in AAA again. Like, you got to be able to figure. Even without Anderson, you still have Merritt, you still have Plutko, you still have Clevenger. That's a lot of pitching options should Carrasco's elbow be an actual problem, where as of the moment, I don't think it is. Should Danny Salazar need Tommy John for some crazy reason? You know, like these things could happen, but I think the Indians could still cover that spot and still have Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer as just like, I mean, that got him to the World Series last year was Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer.
And Trevor Bauer's never going to get hurt, so unless he plays with a drone, obviously. That's the only thing that hurt him is mechanical objects. His arm can't hurt from pitching, but his finger can from a mechanical object.
Yeah, fake Ken Rosenthal just tweeted that Trevor Bauer was shot down by an ISIS drone.
Ooh, so. Fake Ken Rosenthal's getting political. All right.
So that might have happened. It probably didn't, but it might
have.
That
would be what we probably call fake news. If it's coming from a fake reporter, it's definitely fake news for a change.
Rosenthal has an E in it. If you follow one with an A, you'll probably be more entertained, but less accurate, factually.
I guess it depends on what kind of news you're looking for, but yeah, that's all irrelevant.
Yeah, so I mean, I assume that Kluber's going to be fine, and Tomlin's going to be fine, and Bauer's going to be fine. So you've got three guys for the whole season. Clevenger, and it's an interesting thing to look at the prospects, where in a lot of times advanced A, double A, we call guys future aces, and then they get up to triple A, and all of a sudden they're a fifth starter. Clevenger was always considered a future ace, at least since they got him from the Angels for Pistano. Shortly after that, he was considered future ace. Merritt was always really highly regarded. And now all of a sudden, people are afraid that they might have to pitch in a game. They're probably not as good as initially expected, but they're still reasonably good pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, Clevenger's probably a three or a four starter if everything works out good. And Ryan Merritt's probably a five, but he's a serviceable five where you can count on, you know, a handful of good starts a year, possibly. I guess it depends on how things shake out with him. I actually like Plutko more in the five spot, and Well, Sean Mormondo is interesting too, but yeah, it's not a big deal if those guys got to make. I mean, you don't want. I don't think you want. I think the only guy I'd really want making more than 15 starts is Mike Clevenger. I don't know that I would be wanting Ryan Merritt to be making 15 starts this year. I don't think I'd want
Plutko. Well, but then, do you ever want him to? Would you ever want Ryan Merritt to make 15 starts then? Because, I mean, he looked great last year in the ALCS. He looked fine in the regular season, although he didn't get much action. I mean, are you saying that you never want him to be a starter in the Indians rotation?
If he's definitely their fifth starter, then, yeah, I can handle 25 starts from him. If he's if he is their absolute worst starting pitcher in their rotation, yeah, that's fine. But anything more, probably not.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's pretty much where he'd be. Josh Tomlin, even if Josh Tomlin was on the Twins, he would be like their number two starter. They're having so many troubles in. I can't remember who it is now, but they just lost another pitcher in Minnesota to injury. Just like the Reds just lost Disclafini. You know, like on these poor pitching staffs, I think Josh Tomlin is a number two, number three guy right now. And the Indians are essentially at the point where if somebody pitches really well in AAA, maybe you let him go.
That doesn't even seem like it's going to happen either.
No, I think they'll keep him around, but I'm just saying, like, is incredible. You would have a hard time keeping Josh Tomlin in the rotation over him.
Yeah, I mean, the upside is there for Clevenger, more so than Tomlin, so sure, I guess that makes sense. But I guess their depth's okay in general. I mean, it'd be nice to have Anderson as the seventh option, but I guess in the grand scheme of things, it probably won't make much of a difference, you hope.
Yeah, hopefully they won't go to seven pitchers. I mean, and even like Adam Plutko for a game. I wouldn't want Adam Plutko for 15, 20 games, like you said. But a game or two would be nice because maybe next year you want him to be in the rotation or you want him to be competitive to getting into the rotation. At some point, these guys have to make it up. You can't just keep guys in AAA forever.
Right, you've got to decide.
And that kind of brings us to the second injury, which is Jason Kipnis, who today I saw has 4 to 5 weeks out. Obviously, 4 to 5 weeks is going to put us in the middle of May or end of May. So the Indians need another second baseman. Jose Ramirez played second base in the spring game today, which is Sunday. I think that's the best situation, is to have Jose Ramirez play second base, play third base. Now, they could go with Giovanni Ursula, which seems to be the default, or they could go with Yandy Diaz, who seems to be the best choice, but he's never played in the majors before, and something else. I mean, maybe he's a poor defender. I don't know. You've seen Yandy Diaz play, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen Yandy play?
I've only seen him play third base. I've never seen him play anywhere else.
Well, that's all we're talking about right now is third base. So how is he at third base defensively? Because Paul Hoynes, who has never seen him play, thinks he's terrible.
He was average. I mean, he wasn't spectacular. And I actually had the chance to talk to a couple opposing scouts. And, you know, and if you read Fangraphs, if you read Baseball America, if you read Baseball Prospectus, anybody who covers prospects, they've all listed Diaz anywhere from average to even above average, possibly a decent third baseman. He's definitely not Ramirez quality defensively. He's definitely not Urshela defensively, but he's still a capable defender who's definitely not awful from what I've seen and what everybody else says. And everybody else who's saying it is a hell of a lot better evaluating that stuff than I am.
The funniest thing about that is, like, I've seen people all spring now, ever since Paul Hoynes had an article in the Plain Dealer, I think, about how he was a terrible defender. And a lot of the guys who get their information straight from the Indians have been kind of pushing that narrative. And I've seen a lot of people on Twitter, particularly, who I can't remember. He used to write for Everyone Hates Cleveland, and I think for Waiting for Next Year. But I've seen the three of you particularly really going at, like, Jordan Bastian and these other guys. Why is he a bad defender? Why all of a sudden, after he's been a great defender for years, why now is he terrible? theory on this? Because I haven't heard any, I haven't seen anyone respond to that question. That's a lot.
Because he's 25 years old, and if they bring him up in April, then they reach Super 2 status, and they reach, you start the clock time earlier. That's.
But why would you care on a 25-year-old?
That's the whole point.
He's going to be 32 when he gets that. Out. That's why, I mean, that was the discussion that went around on Saturday. Was it Friday or Saturday? A bunch of us were talking back and forth. Mike Brandyberry was involved because I did the Tribe win last night. Because Mike Brandyberry, back when he used to do Tribe Time Now, one of the things he said, he always brought up that the Indians, all of a sudden in late March of 2015, said that Francisco Lindor had a litany of things to work on. All of a sudden, after Terry Francona had said he was the most mature player he had ever seen at that age, and they had just talked him up for 3 years, and then all of a sudden he had a litany of things to work on, which he was done with by June, which is surprisingly right after Super 2 status hit. And then all of a sudden he was perfect and he almost won Rookie of the Year. And it really seemed like maybe they were keeping him down because of his service time. Just maybe.
Yeah.
And no, but there's no reason to do that with Yandy Diaz at all.
Right. Yandy Diaz isn't Francisco Lindor, and I'm actually okay with what they did with Lindor, if that's the case, because Francisco Lindor is
I thought the Super 2 thing is different than the arbitration thing, because or the service time thing. The service time thing ends in May. They could have brought him up in mid-May, and he still would have had that extra year where he would have been with the team. But Super 2 just means you have 4 years of arbitration. So that just was a cheap thing. They would have had to pay him more money, and that's why they kept him down, and that's annoying to me.
They don't have to wait till May.
I mean,
they don't have to wait till May. Chris Bryant came up the second week of the season, or the first Saturday of the season, I think. All he had to do was not reach 172 days.
That bugged me that they kept him down just to be cheap, because Lonnie Chisenhall is a Super 2 player. Who cares about Lonnie Chisenhall? I mean, legitimately, he's a Super 2 player. He's going to get that fourth year of arbitration. Next year will be his fourth year. So who cares?
And
to keep Yandy Diaz down. To keep Yandy Diaz down in the minors because of some silly thing like this, and to put it out in the media that he's a poor defender. Maybe he is. I mean, Tyler Naquin was always lauded as a great defender, and then he comes up and he's a poor defender. Maybe this is them switching the narrative so that when Yandy comes up and he sucks, we don't all go crazy and be like, hey, you said he was the greatest third baseman of all time, and now he's terrible. You know, maybe that could be them hedging their bets a little bit, but I feel like it's not.
I'm going to be very surprised if that's the case. And you know what? Fine. All right, yeah, the Super 2 thing is really dumb. But they want to wait until, you know, they want to get that sixth year of service time from him. Fine, wait a week, I guess. You can afford to do that. But
it can be any time in the season. So start him on the team to begin the year, because he's obviously a better hitter than Giovanni Urshela. If you don't know what we're talking about, we're essentially saying that Kipnis is going to miss a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks of the season. So you're going to start Jose Ramirez at second. Well, if you start Yandy Diaz at third to start the year, you can put him down in AAA in June and leave him there for 3 weeks, and that's the same as if you had started the season with him there.
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, just wait until Kipnis comes back.
And I think it makes sense for this year to have their best 25 guys at all times, and Diaz is probably one of the best 25 players in the organization right now that's Major League ready.
To me, he certainly is, and they're going to find some way to get Michael Martinez on this roster. I can see it coming. I know it's happening. And Michael Martinez is possibly the
hurt.
Yeah. Locked to win that utility man job anyway. And now if you're talking about Yandy Diaz or someone else getting that third baseman, or Giovanni Urshela getting that third baseman spot, now you're definitely looking at a Michael Martinez utility man. And he's literally one of the worst baseball players in baseball history.
My favorite.
I mean, he's up Michael there with Martinez Terry Francona.
My favorite Michael Martinez stat is from Kevin Dean, who used to write for IBI, and I think I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but he said something to the effect of, by looking it up, that 150 pitchers, or there's been 900 pitchers who have had 150 more at-bats, or more at-bats that have had a better weighted of runs created plus than Michael Martinez in baseball history. So that tells you how bad
Martinez really is. Look up his stats. I look at position players only. If I go on Fangraphs to look at how bad Michael Martinez has been in his career, I look up position players only. But there have been plenty of pitchers who are way better than him.
And he has no business playing more than once or twice a month to spell somebody on a team that should be contending for a World Series.
Yeah, especially if you're talking about, you have guys like Eric Gonzalez, you have guys like Yandy Diaz, who can play a couple times a week and be pretty good compared to someone who's going to be just awful, not even questionably. This is too much time on Michael Martinez.
Yes, every second is too much time on Michael Martinez.
In the same vein as the kind of colluding to keep guys' service time down and making up bullshit excuses of why they can't be in the majors right now, the Major League Baseball has introduced the 10-day DL this year. And I say in the same vein, because over the past Jason Giambi seasons, the Indians have kind of abused the disabled list. And it's always been an issue with me. And I've always wondered why Major League Baseball never looked into it. But apparently now, Major League Baseball is going to take a serious look at teams who are abusing the 10-day DL. At least. Maybe, I don't know if... Is there still a 15-day DL? I didn't even look at that.
It's gone.
Or are we just all 10 days, no matter what?
It's 10 or 60.
Okay, so it's 10 or 60 now. So I think they're going to be looking more seriously at teams that are abusing that list. So let's say you have a starting pitcher who isn't maybe great. And you're like, well, we've got a doubleheader coming up. We need some extra pitchers up here. Let's put this pitcher on the 10-day DL. Let's bring up another hitter. fill out the lineup a little bit for a few days, and then we'll switch back. They're going to call shenanigans on that type of behavior. And I think the Indians have been very guilty of that, at least since 2014. A good guy and putting him on the DL who wasn't hurt just to get an extra roster spot.
There's plenty of teams that have done it, but you're right. I mean, it's an easy way to abuse it. It's going to be even easier 10 days now, but baseball says they're not going to allow anybody to do that. It's going to make it harder. I don't know why they just didn't agree to
I like that.
Man roster. Add a player to the roster, and you really don't have an issue with this.
Yeah, I personally like that they're going to take it more seriously. It always bugged me that, oh, it's August 15th. Let's put Giambi on the 15-day DL. by September 1st, maybe he'll be better.
Oh, he is.
That type of that type of shenanigans always bugged me when you're playing around. I mean, to me, you keep the 25 guys that are the best on the team, and you can do some manipulation by sending a guy down if he has options, send him down for 10 days, especially in the bullpen. And I think one of these, somebody mentioned the other day, it could have been you because I follow you on Twitter at JL_baseball.
Shout out.
somebody said something about how Jabba Chamberlain lost his job because of the Indians' extra inning game in Toronto. And they were talking about how they were talking about the runner on second to start the 11th inning or whatever, first and second to start the 11th inning and on, that they're doing the World Baseball Classic. And if they had had that, maybe that game wouldn't win 19 innings. But this also comes up in that too. Like if you have a game like that and you need to bring up a reliever the next day, can you just throw someone on the 10-day DL, bring up the other reliever, and then in 10 days you get that guy back?
You could. I don't know if they're going to baseball is going to buy that. I mean, you could. I guess it depends on how serious they're going to take. I mean, are they going to take it as seriously as the you have to keep one foot in the batter's box at all times? Because that lasted for about a couple months, and then after that, it was just kind of back to the way it was. So, how much do you believe?
I don't know. Was that ever? I don't know if that was ever an official rule.
It was.
They claimed they were going to find guys for it. It was.
They never did.
Yeah. Okay, I remember Ortiz having a problem with that one. But as far as the DL goes, the biggest problem is when you put a guy on with old. You've got a guy on because he's a veteran. I'm doing the air quotes. he's a veteran presence like Juan Uribe. I mean, that was a great one. Last year, Juan Uribe gets hit in the balls. He missed like 3 or 4 days. They could have put him on the 10-day DL and he's still in the dugout with his sore balls. But he could have done everything he did as a veteran leader. Air quotes. you know, from the DL. And that's essentially what Giambi did. And Giambi's now back in camp as a coach. Which to me, I always said, just bring him in as a coach and don't. And he's a veteran leader, yes. Bring him in as a coach and don't waste this 25-man spot that you could be using on someone who could actually help the team.
I don't know. My only argument, I mean, I agree with you, and they kept Giambi around on the DL because he was a veteran presence, and that's, you know, by being on the DL, he got to travel with the team and whatever. The only thing I would say is that there is a distinct difference, and I don't know how much of a difference it would be considering Giambi wasn't that far removed from playing. Guys in the clubhouse do view coaches and players differently, you know. So, yeah, he might have been a coach, or he might have been a player or a coach, but he wouldn't have had the same effect as he did as a player.
I guess I could see that. But how about, to change topics to something you don't want to talk about, how about Bruce Chen?
He's a funny guy.
Damn, he was impressive. Oh, man. I couldn't believe that. I just thought China was going to get blown out. And Bruce Chen comes out there and pitches 4-plus innings. Shutout baseball. He was incredible. The World Baseball Classic too much. But that was Eric Gagne coming out and pitching 2 scoreless innings in relief. After essentially being out for 10 years. I think 2008 was the last time Eric Gagne pitched in a major league game. But those two guys, especially Bruce Chen, as a coach in the Indian system, to come out there and pitch against professional athletes and do so well, and then he goes back the next week and now he's a coach again, they've got to look at him with a new light, I would think.
Players or the Indians in general?
The Indians minor leaguers that he is coaching. Like the rookie-level guys. He was in Arizona a lot last summer working with the guys that came up from the Dominican Republic because he speaks Spanish, and he was born in Panama. So he's been used as the international kind of adjustment coach, the guy that gets guys used to playing in America. And since so many of those guys, the DSL guys, come up and play in the AZL the next year, he was in Goodyear a lot, so I saw him all the time. I think those guys have to look at him differently now that he's pitched in the World Baseball Classic at almost 40 years old.
Yeah, I mean, it gives him a bit of credibility, absolutely. And he could still be a veteran presence without taking up a roster spot.
Yeah, so he can still seem like the young, cool guy, kind of. I guess he's 20 years older than most of these guys, but he could be the young, cool guy. And he's also you know, to me, it should get you a little bit more respect at that level. And I think that's kind of what Giambi was. And Giambi is now. And Grady Sizemore's back now.
Let's not get started on Grady Sizemore. I'll take up a lot of time of the podcast.
No, we don't need to talk about – I don't want to talk about your Facebook comments. But but to bring guys like Sizemore and Hafner in who aren't quite as removed as like Kenny Lofton when they brought him in a couple years ago. I mean, I guess Lofton played through 2007, but he was really – I mean, that was almost 10 years after his prime in 2007. So, you know, when they brought him in, he was an old man, and he comes in and says didn't count in 2013, and then people don't like him. But, I mean, you bring in Grady Sizemore and those guys, those are a little younger. Current generation of players can tolerate that a little better. I mean, I would guess Brantley – I can't remember exactly when Grady's last year was, but it had to have been close to Brantley's first year.
In Cleveland or in general?
Like they in Cleveland. Yeah, Grady's last year was, what, 2 years ago, but
I want
to
say
I think they may have been close to playing.
2012. He didn't play. He didn't play in 2012, but they.
Yeah, so Brantley came up in 2010, I think.
They played together for a few years.
So they would have played. Yeah, so they played together. So you're talking about contemporaries playing together. So I think that does make a difference, and you don't want to waste that 25-man spot on that. And I think the whole purpose of this discussion is to say that Michael Martinez sucks.
That's always a good way to end.
Anyway. On to the primary topic of this particular show I'd like to talk about is the designated hitter. And in a roundabout way, I was watching the very first game, I believe, of the World Baseball Classic was Team Israel against Korea, maybe. Team Israel played somebody opening day. And Zeed, who was their closer and then started a game later on, threw 49 pitches in relief in extra innings. And I believe he got the last out on, like, pitch 49. But it brought a thought to my mind. What if he didn't get the last out on pitch 49? Kind of like Bruce Chen also. He got his last out, I believe, on pitch 50. It was either 49 or 50.
It was 49 and double play.
In the World Baseball Classic. Yeah, and the World Baseball Classic, there's a rule. If you pitch 50 pitches, you have to take, I think, three or four days off, and you aren't allowed to pitch again. So both of those situations came to the manager, and you have to think, am I going to take this guy out at pitch 49, or am I going to leave him in and give us a better chance of winning today? Is it worth more to win today than to win in 2 days? I think in most of the cases it would be worth more to win today. But a lot of the times they say, no, I'm going to take him out. I want to win in 2 days. In the later rounds, we've seen a lot of pitchers go to like 75 pitches, which means they can't pitch again, but they want to get the most they could possibly get out of those guys. And what this really hit me with was all these National League fans who say they love the DH because of strategy. Well, this is another strategy. Do you take out the pitcher because he's at 49 pitches? Do you take out the pitcher because you want to pinch hit for him and you want to add more runs? It's a very similar strategy in game. But does the strategy itself make it worth the fact that now you're handicapping yourself in this game? You got nothing on this.
Yeah, I mean, okay, fine. I mean, that's the same. It's the same rule as, you know, even in the playoffs. You know, people are talking about, like, Francona. You know, he wants to win today, or even the regular season. People who have last 3 years have been arguing. If the Indians get off to a slow start in April, it's just as bad as having a bad stretch in September because every win's a win. And in the World Baseball Classic, it's the same thing because you're not guaranteed another day. But yeah, and the strategy part,
agree. But like, would you like a pitch count rule in Major League Baseball just because it adds more strategy? That's essentially what I'm asking right now. Like, would you have like Kluber was held to a pitch count in the World Series because they knew he had to pitch three games, and they wanted to make sure he was able to pitch three games. But that was their own choice. And if any particular game they felt, oh, we need Kluber to go two more innings, that was their choice. Would you have looked at it was actually a pitch count where he had to pitch? If he pitched more than 50 innings, he would only be able to pitch twice in the World Series instead of three times.
Right, so you're trying to win today, but think about tomorrow. But no, I would not want a pitch count in baseball, but I also don't think that the strategy of the DH makes baseball any better. I think it makes it worse because then you have to decide whether you want a pitcher to keep pitching well or if you want to add runs and then risk losing the game. Maybe your bullpen's not as good. Look at San Francisco, how many saves they blew last year. Would they have benefited from keeping Madison Bumgarner in more games, throwing complete games and not blowing games, and not having to pinch hit for him because they wanted to add an insurance run?
Well, who's pinching for Madison Bumgarner? Honestly, he was their DH when they played the Angels, I believe.
Okay, bad example, I guess, but.
But other examples, yes. To me, I see it as the exact same thing. Like, the people who say DH equals, or no DH equals strategy, and DH is just mindlessly pounding on the baseball, I just see that as ignorant. Like, you don't need, and of course, I was born after 1973 or wherever, whenever the advent of the DH was. So my whole life I've watched American League with DH. So that's what I grew up with knowing. So I guess I could see if you grew up watching pitchers hit, that maybe you want to keep it the same. And there's a lot of rule changes. And if you want to hear about the rule changes, go listen to Baseball and Brews podcast. They covered all those things and complained about all those different things. But with the rule changes, a lot of times the people who get mad about them, and again, the argument for the rule changes is if you were watching baseball before 1994 or 1995, there was no wild card. But now there's a wild card, and everyone loves a wild card. So if you grow up with a rule, a lot of times you like it. What, are you anti-wild card?
No, not at all. I mean, and I actually think that the Indians did make the playoffs in 2013. Their paycheck says so.
Well, no, I'm not talking about two wild cards. I'm just talking about one wild card back in 1994 when they added it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was complaining. I don't think...
Even when they switched to divisions back in, 1969, when they added the two divisions and then they switched to three divisions in 94, you know, I don't... There were probably people at the time who didn't like it, but everyone who's watching baseball now pretty much has grown up with these rules. So if you're watching American League Baseball, you like the wild card, you like the three divisions, you like the DH. If you're watching National League Baseball, though, you haven't grown up with the DH. And I've talked to so many people who go, oh, National League Baseball is so much better because of the strategy. And I just don't see it. I'd rather watch a hitter hit than a pitcher. And I don't care that it was a rule changed 100 years after baseball was invented. I don't care. I think that was a good rule change back in the 70s when they made that decision.
Aaron, your more casual fan likes offense. Let's be honest. I mean, you know, I prefer a 2-1 game or a 3-2 game. But your average baseball, your average fan who doesn't really watch that much, who's an occasional watcher, would prefer a 10-7 game. I don't think that's
well, and I don't think that's the only part of it either. Because if you just want offense, then you could also say, well, now we have two DHs, and one of them can play short. You could have a shortstop who doesn't hit, and the shortstop just plays defense. So you can have a guy like Simmons with Los Angeles, who just plays defense, and then you have another guy hit for him, and that would be even more offense. But I don't think you need that, because in the history of baseball, there have been a lot of good hitting shortstops. I'd say it's probably the weakest position offensively in baseball history if you take an overall look at it, and that's not looking at any numbers. I'm just assuming it could be second base. But it's got to be either second base or shortstop as far as weakest offensive position or catcher. But between those three positions, you could say those are the weakest positions ever in baseball history, but there's still been great hitters who have hit in those things. The only great hitter that was a pitcher in Indians history was Bob Lemon. And he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, you've got one guy in all of Indians history that could hit. Even CC could crush it because he weighed 300 pounds, allegedly. He probably weighed 20, 30 more than that. But, he could crush it because if he accidentally made contact, it was going out of the ballpark. But really, the only good hitting Indians pitcher was Bob Lemon. In over 100 years of baseball. And they played over 70 years without the DH. And he's the only guy who could hit. He also hit better than Michael Martinez, by the way.
Shocking. And furthermore, I mean, not every pitcher is Madison Bumgarner. Like, Madison Bumgarner is a good hitting pitcher. There are, you know, some good hitting pitchers. But, you know, 99% of the pitchers are not Madison Bumgarners. Then you have people who say, well, when Bartolo Colon hit a home run, it was amazing. Look, you don't get that in the American League. You don't get things like that. No, you don't, but that happens, you know, as much as you win the lottery. Like, Bartolo Colon will probably never hit another home run again. He had him before.
He's been playing since 1998. Every year he's ever played his career, he's had an interleague play at least. He's played in the National League for a while. He's hit one home run ever since 1998.
And people want to point to that.
That was when you were born.
It's great.
I mean, I just made a joke, but I think it might be true. Never mind.
No comment.
You were born before 1998, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well before.
I throw it out there because I forget. I think all of our writers on Bringer Baseball were born before 1998.
I would hope so. I don't know. I think everyone has. Yeah.
I think.
I don't.
Oh, wait, no. One of them has.
Twitter in general that happened.
You know what? We did add a new writer. El Oso Alto?
Yeah, you're going to have to ask that chair what year he was born.
Yeah, he's definitely 1998 or more recently. But
yeah, if he's still in high school, yeah, that would definitely be somewhere in the 2000 range.
But everybody else who writes for Burning River Baseball is pre-1998, which means they're pre-Bartolo Colon. But then it's kind of crazy that there are people who are now essentially adults who Bartolo Colon has been pitching their entire life.
That's pretty awesome. But his one home run doesn't make a difference in whether pitchers should hit.
No, he should not hit at all. And
that's a bad example of why you should let the pitchers hit in every league, because of one thing that might happen out of 1,000 at-bats. Like, that makes absolutely zero sense. That's a horrible
argument. And you brought up the point the other day, I think, about the Cincinnati Reds having a DH at home.
In the spring training.
Or something along those lines. In spring training, a lot of the time, Saturday afternoon, the Reds played and they actually let the pitcher hit. But up until then, the first 2.5-3 weeks of spring training, the Reds have used a DH every single game. And Justin's point was that they shouldn't be allowed to because they're a National League club. They should have to play by their own rules. But they use a DH because they want to see as many hitters as they can. They don't care. They know that if a pitcher gets an extra 10 at-bats during spring, he's not all of a sudden going to become a slugger. So they want to see as many hitters as they can in the field. They want to see him bat because they want to know who's the best. So even National League teams agree. A lot of them in the minors, I think, for the National League teams, they use a DH.
I'm pretty sure that most minor league teams do use a DH.
Definitely at the AZL level, I've never seen a pitcher hit. I will say at the upper levels, yeah, AAA maybe they start letting them hit. But there's a reason for that. They know that even if they work at it every day, they're never going to be a good hitter. So it's never going to – it doesn't make any difference. These other guys are working every single day to be great hitters. Literally, they're taking batting practice every single day. But the pitchers aren't. Why not? Because it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. That's why they shouldn't bat. And I will stick with this, and I hope Rob Manfred has not been a favorite of mine since he jumped in. But if he's going to make changes, especially drastic ones, I hope one of the ones he makes is just getting rid of the pitcher's hitting. There's no reason.
I could call his time as a commissioner successful if he does that. Other than that, I hate what he's done so far. But that would be the one good thing he could do.
Yeah, I feel like he came in and his two goals were to prove that he wasn't Bud Selig and to make the game more mainstream. But I'm not mainstream. And if you're listening to this, you're not mainstream. And Justin's not mainstream. We are not watching Dancing with the Stars and listening to Justin Bieber, I'm assuming. I mean, if you are, that's fine. But probably we're not.
I am not a believer.
Those things are really popular, but they're not us. You know, like, so to push baseball onto those people who like those things, it's almost making more of a problem than it's solving. You're not really gaining new fans. I don't know that they're going to be the ones who watch every game, and they're going to be the ones who buy the jerseys, and they're going to be the ones who support the team. It seems a little counterintuitive to me to go for that thing, but I think a universal DH role would actually benefit baseball, especially with interleague play all season long. The American League has the advantage every time. They have a specific guy on the roster who's a hitter. So even if you're playing in a National League park, you've got this pinch hitter who's going to be way better than any National League pinch hitter because he is a designated hitter. He's been designated, this guy is a hitter.
Except when the NL comes.
Like, is there National League? Well, yeah, then you've got that extra hitter too. But in a National League park, let's say the Indians are opening, and I said this before and someone got mad at me. I said the Indians are opening in Arizona. They're opening in Texas, and then they come to Arizona for the second series this season. So when the Indians come to Arizona, who's going to have the better pinch hitter? Arizona or Carlos Santana or Edwin Encarnacion? One of those two guys is going to be a pinch hitter late in the game. You think Arizona's got someone better than that?
Not a chance.
I mean, why would they?
But
no one does. Giants, the Dodgers, Giants, none of those teams have a better pinch hitter than Edwin Encarnacion or Carlos Santana.
Yeah, but the counterpoint to that is you get to take the NL gets to take probably your best hitter. Let's say Santana starts at first and Encarnacion's the best hitter. Arizona gets a game, at least one game, where Encarnacion only gets one at-bat probably. So they would rather have
But the American League team still – yeah, that's true, but the American League team still has the advantage.
It's one at-bat, though. It's one at-bat. They don't. They get one at-bat from him a game if they do that.
But the 25-man roster – the 25-man roster of an American League team is better than the 25-man roster of a National League team because they specifically carry a guy who hits. Who it doesn't matter if he fields, and it's really difficult for a National League team to take that guy on their roster.
Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, and that's hard for the Cubs to do that. And it costs them because they put him in the outfield or they put him at catcher or wherever, and it hurts their team.
But when they come to America,
like the Twins had like four. The Twins had four or five guys who were like a DH first base last year, and they were able to do that. Because they had that DH spot.
Just look at the World Series. I know it's a small sample size, so it's really hard to tell. But look at how it affected the Indians. They had to sweat through four innings, or five innings, I forget how long it was, of Carlos Santana playing left field one time in the three games they played in Wrigley Field. The other two games, he got to bat once. Or was it twice? I can't remember. Okay, one game he got to bat once. Once because he played first base and Napoli sat that game. So in two different games, Napoli and Santana both only got one at bat. But when they
Well, you can say that's a waste of money.
It's a waste of a it's a disadvantage for the Indians because their best.
I still think it's an advantage for the Indians, and the Cubs are an unfair comparison because the Cubs have Schwarber, who is essentially his DH. If you're a National League team that can afford it, you can buy that DH, but as far as I'm aware, they're the only team that really has that. Maybe the Reds will this year with Ryan Rayburn if they decide to break camp with him.
I hope he plays the infield, by the way. They keep tweeting about him like he also is an infielder. I haven't seen him play infield since he was the Troy. I hope he plays infield this year.
So yeah, he's a good second baseman in 2010. It was before 2010, probably.
I get the Cubs are a bad comparison, but think of the advantage. What is stopping an NL team? Let's say they're going. They know they have America. They have an interleague series in American League Park coming up. What's to stop them from sending down an extra reliever and calling up a hitter from AAA that's maybe not as good as Carlos Santana, but he's still better than the last guy they'd have on their bench as a position player.
Well, they should. They
get the advantage because they get to eliminate their worst hitter. And add no matter what you do, any position player they add that's on their bench is better than any pitcher. They get the advantage.
That's kind of my point is that the American is because they have to do that. If the National League team decides to do that, then they kind of eliminate that advantage But then they're also saying that they should play with a DH. You think about an American League team, they have an extra starter. So the American League team is paying 5 to 15 million more, you know, for their total team salary to cover that DH spot. Then most National League teams don't do that. The Cubs do. They're, as far as I'm aware, they're really the only team that is doing that at this point. I can't think of another team that has a National League team that has a guy who can't play in the field at all, you know, who is good enough to be a starter. And that's why I always said the Cubs should trade Schwarber, because they could get a ton back for him from an American League team, and then he could play every day. Because to them, he's a defensive liability. You know, so he's going to hurt them every time they put him out in the field. But to an American League team, he's a plus every single day.
Well, how many teams carried Lenny Harris as a pinch hitter for years?
I would assume one.
I mean, Lenny Harris was on a bunch of teams as a pinch hitter because that was all he did. Look at Matt Stairs. The Phillies carried Matt Stairs for however many years. Matt Stairs stuck around as a pinch hitter.
But if he was – Matt Stairs was not a great player. He may be the greatest player in the history of Team Canada. He's not, because they had Justin Morneau and Joey Votto. But and Michael Saunders. There are a lot of people better than Matt Stairs on Team Canada. But if you're playing for Team Canada, you could – like, Matt Stairs is a great hitter, but he's not a great hitter. He was okay.
He's not a great hitter. Having a pitcher hit.
Well, yeah, and that's what we're talking about, pinch hitters. And that's why I'm saying that
– He couldn't play the field, but the teams carried him.
But they didn't pay him $15 million.
Neither Schwarber.
They've announced that Carlos Santana is going to start at first base. Encarnacion is a $20 million DH per year for 3 years. Mm-hmm. He's a $60 million overall DH. There is no National League team ever that would pay $20 million a year for a guy who's going to DH. And that's what they would have to do to be equal to an American League team in interleague play, in an American League park, or in the World Series.
Okay, so your argument is that when they use the DH, it's not as good as the American League's DH, which I agree. It's not. It never will be.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. If they made it just a universal rule, everyone's got a DH, then it would be the same. And then National League teams would pay a couple more dollars, a little more percent of their payroll would go to that last bench guy who is now all of a sudden a starter. And you'd watch better baseball. I don't watch a whole lot of National League baseball. I don't like watching the Diamondbacks, even though I'm in Arizona. I'll go see them a few times a year. It's just not that entertaining to me. I don't need to see that. And we talked about the intentional walk rule, I think, a couple shows ago.
Mm-hmm.
The whole four pitches to an intentional walk. And they said the majority of intentional walks, by far, at least since Barry Bonds retired, have come from walking the eighth batter in a National League game to get to the pitcher. Why do we want to see that? I mean, there's a reason they're walking that eighth batter to get to the pitcher. Nobody wants to see that. That's not a strategy. It's boring. If everybody does something, it's not strategy.
And that's why NL teams, they come to AL parks, usually do have an extra hitter on the roster they can use for that spot, because they know it's better than using the pitcher. My argument is, though, if NL fans like the pitcher hitting so much, and the NL refuses to agree to universal DH, why should we allow them to keep using the DH in American League parks? Okay, when American League team goes to National League park, we'll play by their rules. We'll not hit. We'll use our pitcher, because you are. When you come here, use your pitcher. That's what you like. Or you just let the AL you let the AL use the DH in the NL park, and you just make the NL team use their pitcher here.
That's the worst argument I've ever heard.
The weirdest or the worst?
The worst. No, that's great. It's great. You know, I'm sure that would last a very long time of getting an extra batter every.
Why would they get? Why do they get? If they're so focused on the pitcher hitting being a much better rule for baseball, why do they use it in the American League parks?
Well, it's not 1968 anymore, or even maybe it was even a long time before 1968 when the National League stopped being a separate entity from the American League. When this thing started, they were actually really, like 1901, they were really different things. The World Series didn't happen a couple years early on. Was it like 1905 or so? Because one of the National League teams didn't want to play an American League team because they didn't consider them a legitimate league. Like, it's not back then. It's all Major League Baseball. It's all one thing. We all play by the same rules. It's really stupid to have this one rule that's different.
Right. Like, that would be the equivalent of basketball. In the West Coast, the Western Conference, not having a three-point line, but the Eastern Conference does. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, and I'll give credit to Matt Bollinger, who is dating one of our writers. He said on the Baseball and Brews show that it would be like if the NFL didn't – or, you know, like if – he didn't say it exactly this, but if the AFC had the forward pass and the NFC didn't have a forward pass, because at one point in time the forward pass was a new rule in football.
And it was
– completely changed the game. So what if the NFC didn't have the forward pass? You're playing two different completely different games. At this point, all the leagues are homogenized. You could jump from one league to the other as a free agent, and nothing changes. You're still getting paid the same amount of money. You're still being run by the same thing. Every single baseball internet site looks the same. There was a point in time, even you know, at the beginning of the internet, where all the teams ran their websites differently. Now they're all identical. You go from one to the next, they're all the same. It's one organization. Everything looks identical from top to bottom. Everyone's got 25 men on their roster. They got a 40-man, where they've got control over them. They've all got AAA clubs and AA clubs and single. Like, everything is identical across the league. Let's just finish that and make the DH identical, too. It's so stupid.
I agree. We agree for once. We agree on something.
I think we've agreed on everything ever. It's going to be until we start getting some political stuff that we can finally disagree on something.
Let's not go there. Let's just not.
I think we agreed on all the statistical stuff last time we talked.
I think so.
Right. I mean, well, I'll find a topic we don't agree. Steroids, maybe.
Maybe.
Pro steroid.
How about I don't care? Does that count as a take? Or is that a cop-out?
Yeah, that's pretty much on my side of it, I think.
If you do it, do it.
I think we both like Carlos Santana.
We both like Carlos Santana. We both hate Michael Martinez.
Yeah, maybe we're going to have to get someone else in here to fight with. Gang up on somebody.
I mean,
to make this really entertaining. What's that?
If you think Michael Martinez is going to have a breakout year, we can disagree.
There was somebody who was arguing the other day with against Gavin, and I'm going to keep bringing up Gavin because Gavin is one of the greater followers on Twitter. If he'd write something for the site every once in a while, I'd be really happy. Potter_Gavin, you can follow him. And he gets in fights with people a lot. I try to keep it cool now. I'm trying to play it even and not get in fights with anybody. But he'll get in fights with people a lot, and he was fighting with someone the other day over Michael Martinez. And I found it hilarious. Maybe we need to find that person who likes Michael Martinez and have her on the show.
Sure, let's do that and see how that goes.
No, I don't even want to talk about him. I hate him so much. And it has nothing to do with him making the last out of the World Series. It has to do with him being on the roster for the last out of the World Series, but it doesn't have to do with him actually physically making it. I don't care who made the last out.
Does it have to do with the fact
you don't win or lose?
He's worse than some pitchers at hitting?
Yes, it has to do with the fact that he was on the roster at all in the World Series when you knew that could possibly potentially happen in the future where you would need him to do something. Because the last out is not when you win or lose the World Series. They should have won it three games before then. Anyway, that's it for tonight. We will find something to fight about eventually. I've been Joe Koblenz. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Burning River BB. He's been Justin Latta. You can follow him on Twitter at JL underscore baseball. And he probably he's scared of his last name, and that's why he goes by JL.
Terrified.
But I'll put it out there anyway. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next week probably, or the week after that. Enjoy your Danny Cunningham and Ben Beldon in between with their basketball takes. I still haven't seen a Cavs game this year. Have a great night, and go Tribe.